photographer, isn't it for like rich kids who just kind of hang out and take pictures of beautiful girls and they're like, you know, rich from generations? I was like, what are you talking about? Like, photography is a career.
Arcade Studio Podcast, conversations about creativity with guests that use it for a living. Available on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, and many other platforms. This podcast is 100% self-produced and free. If you like the episode, guest, topic, Reno's hats, or Andy's pecs, think about subscribing to our channels, leaving us a review, and following us on Instagram. Every little gesture is fundamental to help us grow. Okay, the intro is almost over. Let's start the show. Arcade Studio Podcast with Andrea and René Olivo. Listen more.
Arcade Studio Podcast. We're here with Paolo Zerbini. Finally, I'm very happy to have you here, dude.
Welcome. Ciao. Thank you very much for having me.
So we're going to do this one. It's probably going to be a mix of English and Italian going through the thing because it's both of our mother tongues sort of thing. And Paolo is the one of the founders of Bellissimo magazine. And also you've got a new book out called Tagada.
That's right.
So where should we start? Let's start from how you started as a photographer. Where did you first pick up a camera?
Well, that's a funny one. I mean, I when I was 17, I kind of went to the States for a year as an exchange kind of program. And, you know, I never took any art. I was never good at drawing or anything like that. So there I kind of took a photography course. And it sounded, you know, it was very exciting. I spent like about a year doing that when I was in the States. And yeah, and then it kind of stayed with me, I guess, you know. Came back. And when I came back, finishing high school, whatever, in Italy, then when it was time to decide really what to do as a career, then I went for that one.
Did you study it at all or did you just go straight into assisting and working?
No, I mean, what happened basically was that when I came back, then I started working as a normal job. So the guys who paid for me to go, you know, for my year abroad in the States, they hired me, you know, okay, as a kind of a in the sales department of a thing. It was a company selling agricultural parts. They were leader in the world. I was selling this very particular agricultural part for the tractor, and it was very bad. It was very depressing, you know. Started kind of not being very happy. Kind of drinking a lot, and my dad looked at me and said, "Just can't see all of this anymore. Go and just study something else. Just study something else you like." And then I had to pick something that I was actually excited about. So went back to an English-speaking country, which was the UK this time. Signed up for a 3-year course with never having been to the UK ever before, which was kind of interesting, really. Because then I landed in Birmingham at night, and I signed up for this university, and it was in Wolverhampton.
Oh yeah.
And I knew nothing about, you know, the whole kind of UK thing, where was good, where was bad. I just didn't want to go to London because it was too expensive. But
right.
I just didn't want to get my family to be hit with such expenses straight away. And landing in Wolverhampton was very interesting. Wolverhampton, I was like, this England is a real shithole.
Yeah. Wow.
Raining.
No, it's got one of the best football teams in the world, the Wolves.
But the Wolves, yeah. Amazing. Actually, no. It was great. But I started working, you know, to pay for some of my extras there and me being there. So, and then one of the works was being a steward at the Wolves Stadium, actually. Right. So I did go a couple of times, although I don't love football. But so yeah, that was it. And so studied there for 1 year, then decided that there were better schools around some other parts of the country. So applied for another school. There was Cheltenham, very, very different. And Cheltenham was cleaner. Cheltenham was a lot cleaner, prettier in the cost world. But it's very, very boring. Very boring. Yeah. I mean, you have to give it to Wolverhampton. It's a bit, you know, it's a bit edgy.
Party.
It's a part, but yeah, people know how to party and
it's like a university city.
It is, yeah. But it was also a kind of industrial, kind of, you know, it's like around Birmingham, and it's kind of an industrial old town. It's not even a city, I don't think. Is it a city? I don't know. Is it a city?
Ah, it must be a city. Yeah,
but it's like
a small city.
A small city, yeah. But with loads of, you know, kind of industries, lots of kind of, you know, not really well preserved buildings, and it's not very pretty, really,
like Detroit kind of thing.
A little bit, like a little bit, perhaps, yeah.
A little bit smaller, obviously, but.
But then, sorry. Anyway, so I couldn't, you know, I couldn't wait to finish university in Cheltenham. It was so boring. Then I went down to London, started assisting there. Started assisting some really exciting people, actually. In those days, there was a new wave of young photographers, which I very much admired, and Spring Studios.
Yeah.
Spring Studios, who I actually tricked to believe in that I was a digital operator. And they signed
it. We all done that.
Hey, well, yeah, thank you. Thank you for understanding me there. And I was like, yeah, sure, I can do that. Yeah. And then... They gave me a contract right away. They were, you know, very hungry for operators back then. It was the boom of digital.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, you know, some really exciting photographers. There was like Josh Orleans and Jacob Sutton starting off then. And there was like Miguel Riviego, a Spanish photographer, doing very well. And then, you know, some older, more established people like Liz Collins. And, and it was very exciting being an assistant then. You could see them, you know, at the beginning of their career, people who've now done incredible things. So yeah, that was kind of the whole, you know, thing that got me started, I guess, and that's excited. Like, yeah.
So I can see some of those photographers in you, like in your style, like, because, you know, a little bit of Josh Holland's definitely, but you've got this thing, which is quite funny, because having grown up in London as a photographer, your style is very much happy. Like it's a positive. I mean, happy sounds like negative, but it's like a very positive mood that you get from your images. They're sunny, they're bright, the colors are alive, even with Bellissimo and also with Tagada, from what I've seen, because I haven't seen a print copy yet, but from what I've seen of the images online, is just color and energy is coming out of it a lot. And do you think that comes from like your Italian background? Where do you see that? Where did that come from?
Well, you see, I think actually back then, those kids, I like to refer to them as kids because they were like really the young and pumping photographers, like at the beginning of their career. They were doing a lot of studio. And then I was trying to do some of that myself, like kind of going and doing tests myself and in the studio. And then I was doing my own photography on the side, which was like going around the streets and like meeting up, you know, kind of stumbling upon interesting people in London, which I always loved. And so I had two books. I had like my tests, and then I had my kind of personal work. And then one day I went to see this art director who was in Spring, and I was like, oh, look, I'm doing my tests, and, you know, can you just give me some advice? And, you know, there are, when you start off, you know, the most brutal advices you get are the most useful.
Yeah.
So I always really, you know, there were a lot of people going, oh yeah, great, you know, yeah, keep up the good work, whatever. And then some would actually take the moment, if they would give you those 10 minutes, to say something meaningful to you. And I remember this art director going like, this whole studio thing, man, it's not working. Like, stop doing what Miguel does and Josh does in the studio. Show me something else. And then I had my, you know, the black and white kind of images I took on the streets. And it was like, you gotta do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was like, but that's not work. That's not fashion. That's like some crazy dude in the park. It's like, well, I don't know how you're gonna do it, but you have to figure it out. You have to put this thing into this thing. And good luck.
He gave like, you a mission. Like.
Yeah. And I was like, all right. So it took me a while. And then from then, you know, then you go on and then they say, oh yeah, great. It's black and white. But then you got to do color because color is where, you know,
you
can't just do black and white, blah, blah, blah. So it actually did change a lot. So I guess if now the work that I do really resembles me, and as you say, it's kind of, you know, more positive and is more kind of ironic with what we do in Bellissimo, and there's a lot of location. That's it took some time to get there. It wasn't there from the start at all, you know, because you need to find time.
Yeah, you need to find your voice.
You get completely.
Yeah, and also you need to build the trust in the people that are giving you the work, that the crazy stuff that you're doing, because you also shoot a lot of film, so you have to like really.
Yeah.
people that are working with you need to be like, okay, on board. So when you like shooting, you know, anything, they'll be like, okay, it'll be fine.
You can just trust them. Yeah.
You know, I had a flash of some of a question that I wanted to ask you and it went away as like, as soon as it came. Oh, the irony. It's really hard usually to put a sense of humor into images, especially for fashion.
Yeah.
You know, which is what we try. I try to do that a lot as well because it's fun, you know?
Yes.
But often like fashion editors don't enjoy that kind of stuff. So do you say that for your personal work or do you manage to sneak that into your commercial as well?
I try to. I mean, it's a slippery slope, to be honest, because I don't know if... So when people look at images, I guess... I think this thing is changing now a bit. But they don't particularly are looking to laugh or to be amused. You know, they want to be inspired, want to be feeling like, oh, wow, you know, like this is gorgeous. Not often there's space for irony. And I don't always try to kind of push it in.
Yeah.
But I guess that when you kind of deliver it and it's natural and it's like, and it's got a purpose and it's got its own thing going, that actually works and it's fun to do it and it's meaningful in a way. I don't always try to be funny in the pictures.
Yeah, no, of course.
You know what I mean?
You're just being natural in what happens in the moment.
Yeah, because then sometimes you will hit that little, I say little actually, which actually comes quite handy because recently we shot this story which had nothing of, you know, it wasn't supposed to be too funny or anything, but we shot it all around like some big department stores and there was a big Lidl supermarket.
Yeah.
And we had this amazing model, Steffi, and as soon as she walked on set and we took out the pictures, I was like, I've just got this picture in mind and you're just really smiling to me in front of Lidl to say, I shop at Lidl.
Yeah. You know, I saw that picture.
And then it just turned out to be a really interesting image, which people quite love to my surprise. Because like, you never know. You know, what.
But it's got that Martin Parr sort of thing in it. You know, you sort of, because Martin Parr shoots like candid pictures of like weird English, generally English people around the place. But you seem to manage to capture that same sort of energy and put it into like a posed image, which is cool.
Well, thank you very much. I think that as a massive compliment, of course, is you know, he's a great inspiration. Also, though, he is very hard to, you know, it's very easy to mimic Martin Parr. Although he's like, he's so genius that, you know, you can't kind of assume that you'll be able to take a picture like him. But he just kind of made such a name for himself taking a kind of photography that. It's very easy to just go straight for that, and that's also not good. You know, you kind of want your own little kind of subtlety and your own little thing about it. But it's, of course, Martin Parr is one of the ones that you aspire to be mildly kind of referred to in the same phrase.
Because I think what he's done is like his style of photography is one of those things that when you see it, you can do it. It's like painting like Modrian. You know, if you've seen the painting, then okay, yes.
It's like a reference.
Yeah, it's easy to do once you've seen it. But
you have to be the first one to do it. The
special thing is being the first one to do it and think about that, you know, which is like the hard thing for any creative, I think.
But also being, you know, he's not just like genius in what he does. He's got, you know, he's a very obsessive individual and that allows him to take so many photographs, striking always the same kind of chord. He's up there, you know.
He's really great. I saw him walk past once. I was like, holy shit, Martin Parr. It was like seeing Beyonce. I was like geeking out completely. Yeah. I was like, oh no, I'm not going to go up to him.
Although he would have loved, you know.
He probably would have, but I mean, I hate it when people come up to me and ask me for autographs.
Oh, God, yeah, I know what you mean.
All day, every day.
So I try to avoid it when...
and then the selfie.
To do the selfie together, and they took 25 pictures as a pain in the back.
Yeah, no.
So I try to avoid it when I see other people. And it was him and us. There were a couple that I saw. It was during the fashion week. And I was waiting at the airport. I was a driver that that year. And I was just waiting for some stylist to rock up. And then I saw Martin Power walk past and I saw...
And he took a picture of you.
I hope so.
He didn't want to walk up to him and ask him for his autograph either. He was like, no, he the same thing.
He just avoided me completely.
he's a little bit like the Bill Murray of fashion photography. Wow, you know, okay. He's like, you know, you won't... He'll flirt with any kind of job. Like he'll do some fashion if he wants to. You know, he'll do... some, you know, Haribo adverts if he wants to, and then he'll do whatever. And then he's obviously his personal work. I don't think he needs the money. You know,
I don't think so.
But then he's got the foundation, which kind of allows a lot of people to develop their own projects and follow, you know, their own career. So it's a great man. It's a great inspiration. You know, I mean, he's not don't expect like a big. Kind of, you know, fashion photographer rocking up with a hat backwards and just, you know.
That's like the worst. Like in any sector, in any industry, if you see someone like that, you're like, okay.
If you see somebody that looks like what they're supposed to be doing, is that what you mean?
Yeah. Like also, but like
no, no, like if you see a guy who's dressed like a fashion photographer, then you're like, oh my God, this guy's going to be a pain in the back.
Yeah. And they normally have like all the same kind of vibe, like whatever industry you're in. Like
yeah.
The person that rocks up that like seems like, super confident, they know what
except
they're doing.
Except firemen. You want firemen to look like firemen when they arrive.
Yeah. I want nurses to look like nurses.
Oh, absolutely.
We're getting it. Like,
there are some careers that
obviously
you
it's not a rule. There are obviously. Like this, let's say like jobs with uniforms are normally.
But also like when you walk, you know, you walk into a plane and you look at the pilot. You know, they always have such a reassuring face and mannerism, you know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want like the pilot to be all fucking sketchy and all like, you know, or being like all kind of
Bill Murray
tripping over things and like
Bill Murray would be the perfect pilot. Just chilling there looking just like chilling.
There's a bit of that like Caddyshack kind of face all the time. It's like kind of stoned, but like that gives you like a little bit of sense of security.
Yeah.
But I wanted to like go back to something you said in the beginning, because when you said you got into photography, it was basically through a mix of being depressed at work because you didn't like the job and boredom. How did this affect the way you looked at learning photography?
Well, that's a very interesting question actually, because so when I left to the UK, I, you know, that was all I, bad thought were all out. Like, so if I was going to fail that project of being whatever it was going to be, I didn't know back then that I was going to be a photographer, but I started kind of studying, it was a multimedia course. So it was like graphic design and photography and video making, whatever. And so when I went, I knew that if I was, you know, messing that up, then I was going to go back to a job that was making me real bad. And I, you know, I'm not sharing like darkness stories here, but I guess I'm really bad at not being okay with what I'm doing. Mm. And that motivates me to do well at what I like to do, because I'm really shit at coping with terrible jobs or boring stuff. And so, my tutors were kind of impressed about the motivation that I had, and I wanted to kind of learn and do things. And then back then, I think it was a tutor of mine, or was the guy renting out the cameras that was, you always saw me, you know, was like, oh, I'm renting out this camera, because you didn't have cameras on your own back, you know, at university. There was a little store. And you go there and say, oh, can I rent? Can I sign out for this Hasselblad, blah, blah. And the guy was like, oh, you're spending a lot of time in the studio, you're spending a lot of time. I was like, yeah, I got to try and do something with it. I was like, so, but you have to make sure that the safety is good, you know, the UK thing. Because when you'll be a photographer, and I was like, what? But I'll be what? What are you doing? Like, yeah, when you'll be a photographer, you will have to be, photographer. I mean, I'm taking a photography course, but photographer, isn't it for like rich kids who just kind of hang out and take pictures of beautiful girls, and they're like, you know, rich from generations? And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, photography is a career. And I was like, is it now? I was like, yeah, it is. Like you can learn it, then you can do something with it if you want. And then something really kind of interesting happened and was like, okay, so this is, I like this. I don't like the graphic designing of the websites. Video wasn't like my first choice. And then, yeah, I threw all of myself into it. And it's working out for me now. I mean, I'm happy. So that's what matters, isn't it? I mean.
Did the sales job help you at all? because, you know, one of the problems a lot of photographers face is selling themselves. And if you have a background in sales, even if it's a small one, it's you have got a bit of an advantage.
Yeah, sure. But the problem was before I don't want to go through my whole life history,
not.
But I mean, there's a lot there. Like before the office job that I had, there was an office job. Like it wasn't like a sale. I wasn't going to clients.
Okay, you weren't going out. Okay.
No,
I was just pushing papers.
And exactly. Yeah. And they were not happy with me not having cut my hair at the beginning of the job, which I kind of let them believe I would have. So they weren't taking me to fairs. But before that, I was working with my dad in insurance. My dad was an insurance agent, and the whole time I was at school, he was like, you know, finish up the school because you're going to work with me, you know, in the insurance. And I was like, all right. And I really suck at that because that meant selling something that I wasn't really kind of interested in. And I had to, you know, the first targets were my friends. My dad was like, oh, yo, your friend is buying the car, so you got to sell them the insurance to the car. And I was like, we want just to smoke joints. I don't want to get them to buy insurance, you know, like, come on. It really depends on if selling is like something you're really passionate, I guess.
Yeah.
About like Bellissimo or something really that you believe is good, then I guess I can bring out the you know, DNA. The old gab and all that, you know,
Zerbini Senior's teachings of
insurance.
Yes.
He got insurance very early in his life. That's another important thing, I'm sure.
Yeah. but going back to the question, the office job there, no, the office job was really just like What am I doing?
Yeah, it's just
what
motivation to get out of there.
I was pretending to be. So I'll tell you what I was doing, actually. That's actually quite interesting. I had a very good friend who you know, he was reading a lot. He was a lot more kind of well-read than I have ever been. And I started kind of writing a little story just so I could type on the computer while I was at work. And I started writing the little story, which was like a children's story.
All right.
And then I would bring him like those 3 A4 pages of the story. And it was like, oh, this is nice. This is so funny. This is good. You know, come on, bring me more. And I was like, great. So I spent that year writing a little, it was like a children's story, really. To look busy typing and to do something that I wasn't going to get kind of, you know, bored.
Shoot yourself in your Facebook.
Yeah.
That's wicked.
And you still have it, I hope.
I still have it. I never did anything with it. I don't know why. Because, don't know why. But
okay.
Yeah, I still have it, yeah.
That's going to be a next project to do, for sure.
No, there's a friend of mine. So I was giving it to him and I was giving it to another friend of mine. And she was mad about that. And then she grew up to have kids and nephews, and she would read the story to her nephews and her kids to get them to bed. And she saw how much the kids loved it. And every time, she lives in Canada now, and every time I talked to her, she was like, oh, what about, you know, what about Foglietta? Have you done anything about Foglietta? And I was like, not really. I don't think anybody's going to care about it, you know, because it would lead, you know, now would need time to look like properly, kind of proofread it, whatever.
Of course, you have to start it again, and then just have a look at it. But I mean, at least it's there, and the structure seems to be working. So
I don't know. Maybe
you never know. You never know. Now you're concentrating on other things. Yeah. Yeah. Jet setting all the time.
This is something that interests me, though. That okay, one thing is to pretend like you're doing something. We've all done that. I think I've done that a lot. But to actually write a story and to write a specific story, like a children's story, is very specific. Like, where did that come from? Like, were you interested in storytelling and in writing?
I love writing. I love writing. And that as now, like Bellissimo now is giving me the output to do that whenever we do Bellissimo. I always loved writing, but I was never really that. I never really thought I could do it as a job. It's like, you know, if photography is hard, I think just like try to be a writer, man. It's like, I believe it's so challenging. And so, but I enjoy it so much. And when I have the time, and there are periods on and off in my life when I actually take it back on, and I like to write little stories and short stories, you know, nothing too brainy, nothing too complex, but that gives me a great satisfaction to do that. Recently, you know, during COVID time, we'll talk about what we did in COVID time, and I took back on writing a bit, and I started writing about the people of my hometown, which are unbelievably interesting. Now that I go back and I meet them, now that I'm not so close in contact with them, there are some fucking crazy dudes out there, you know, coming up with the weirdest shit. And you've got to better be careful and write it down straight away, because then you forget. And I started kind of writing little short stories about, you know, the dudes in the town. But then what do you do? You can't publish them, because you can't really, because the best thing is the names as well that they got.
Yeah, of course.
And you can't change that. And then if you put real name, not the real name, but the nicknames, I don't know. There's a whole thing there, but it's fun to do it.
Yeah, that's right. But I mean, that's also one of those things that, again, can come out a little bit later on. You know, you have all the material, it's there. And then one day you got gout from all the beer that you're drinking, you can sit.
Yeah, or when they got all the cirrhosis hepatic and they won't pick it up again. Don't wish them.
Nobody's wishing it on anybody, but it's like it's a consequence of our actions.
But do you understand? Like there are some people that you meet in the bar of the town that they come up with some stuff that you wouldn't be able to really make up.
No, of course. It's madness. And then you're good at talking to people, because that's something I'm not really good at.
I like that. Oh, you're great talking.
I'm very good at talking to people like this. I'm terrible at talking to people in a bar.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm terrible. I'm like sitting in a corner of my bar with my drink.
No way. It's weird. I love talking
to
people.
I know. I can see that.
Yeah.
So let's go into Bellissimo. Bellissimo is a Bellissimo magazine. It's a fantastic project. I've seen a couple of the issues so far. And it's writing and photography. And it's got this whole like retro Italian sort of feel to it, but it's still contemporary at the same time. So where does that come from? What's the project there?
I'll tell you exactly where it comes from. So basically, me and my friend Ivan Roberto.
I want to know exactly.
Yeah, exactly. I'll tell you exactly how it went.
To be specific.
So I have a very good friend of mine. Like, he's been one of my best friends for many years since I got to London, and we were assisting together. And we always wanted to spend more time together. And then one time we're like, okay, dude, like we need to spend more time together. What are we going to do? Let's book a holiday. Yeah, let's book a holiday. We were just drinking like somewhere in London somewhere. Like, so we booked a holiday, went to Ibiza. And then you discovered that you want to dance, I want to dance. And he wanted to not dance, do something else. Or just like, you know, you're not made for having a holiday together. You were kind of matched. You were sort of you met each other in a certain situation, which is photography, and then it should kind of, you know, carry on as that. So we thought, dude, I mean, it was fun, because of course it was fun. Yeah, we went out drinking, but I was like, let's not go on holiday together again. Let's do something properly that we're not going to feel bad for a week after we've come back. We're just going to actually be productive somehow. And we started thinking, let's do a project, let's do a book, let's do a magazine. But no, let's not do a magazine, because everybody does a magazine. And then somehow we thought, okay, let's do a because we want to travel.
Right.
So let's do a travel guide of places that you wouldn't really want to go to. And we go there and we show you that if you got, you know, the good spirit, you can have fun even in the worst shithole places.
Fantastic.
So that was the manifesto. And with that, kind of celebrating the people who go actually to those, you know, quote unquote, you know, shithole places and actually have fun and might not be, you know, the places, the people that you normally see on holiday, you, when you go. But that doesn't mean that they're not interesting, that they haven't got a story, that, you know. And so we did. And so we picked Ostia, which is the beach of Rome, as the first destination. And just because I was like, who on earth is ever going to go on holiday in Ostia?
Yeah, only the poor go to Ostia.
Oh, no, but what?
And that's where we are right now.
That's the only the Romans.
Yeah.
If you're not from, you go to Ostia if you're from Rome, and maybe if you're not, you know, extremely literate, let's say, you know, there's a little kind of bagno, like there's a little sort of spot for everybody in Ostia. But I guess if you want like a nicer beach, you'd go a little bit further down, you know. If your car has got enough petrol, you go a little bit down to Frigene or whatever else. But Ostia is the beach of Rome, so like, bang, like your east. Ostia is a neighborhood of Rome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's part of the city.
It's part of the city, and it's got a whole bang of history. You know, it isn't a simple place. But really, you know, the people go there, you know,
it's dodgy. It's a dodgy spot.
Can be.
It's
dodgy.
Like going to like Rockaway Beach, the first one. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, Western Supermare or Blackpool. Those
exactly.
You know, it's not glamorous. Although it's shining sometimes, you know, because it's got that kind of Roman, kind of, you know, like show vibe, off vibe, and that's where we were like, this is gold, you know, because people look incredible in Ostia, like they really, they really believe in themselves. And that makes them absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, they become gods almost. Yeah.
They are, you know, and this is all made by the fact that they have got the confidence to not give a shit, basically. And that was exactly what we were looking for, to celebrate people who don't look at magazine, or not that the magazine that you and I might look at, and are perfectly happy with who they are. And they don't give a toss about what you think of them. And I was like, bang, this is it. This is exactly what we're doing. And we had a lot of fun. We met some incredible people with whom we're still in touch now. And we would talk to them about what we're going to do. You know, it wasn't a hit and run as well.
Yeah.
You know, that we're making it a point of not being a hit and run, where you go down, shoot some people that you find interesting or kind of, you know, funny, haha, and then off you go and make a magazine and never see it. We didn't want it to be like that. So we kept in touch. We did a launch in Rome. Everybody was invited, you know. But obviously there is an ironic side of it. So we're not going to talk about this in an eyebrow way. And the pictures are quite, you know, loud, because those characters are louder, you know, than life. And so it has an irony. It has a whole kind of language, which, you know, it's not my language. It's not Ivan's language. It's the Bellissimo language.
Right.
And we both shoot. You know, you don't know who's taking the picture. And it all comes into Bellissimo. That's it.
That's sick. And then the copy, you write it yourself. You get other people to write it. You work with other artists.
No. And I think we've come clean now, me and Ivan, about telling the whole story. So I write.
Okay.
I write and he says, can't say that. You can't say that. You surely should not say that. And so he's the censura. He's
so nice that you have somebody that does it.
The editor is.
Then I go like, what do you mean? Like, who's gonna ever get offended about that? It was like, I know quite a few people who got offended about that. And so it works. You know, I'm not gonna lie, you know, it can be frustrating at times, but you know, we both know it. But it's obviously obvious.
Yeah.
Obviously obvious?
It's obviously obvious. Something can be obviously obvious. It's obviously obvious and needed. Yeah. No, you need someone that corrects you every now and again. Yeah, absolutely.
No, the importance of an editor is like, it's really important.
Yeah. So especially somebody that you can trust.
Exactly.
You know, that, you know, that is looking out for the best interest of what you're doing rather than the best interest of the pocket or whatever.
Yeah. And best interested of the fact that he's like, you're just not going to do that. he's vetoing it, you know?
Yeah. And so he's also more maybe in tune with what can be considered acceptable and not.
He's very careful and he's a very respectful, not that I'm not, but I guess he's very respectful and he's very aware of our, of the times we live in, rightly so, you know, because we are walking on thin ice. But again, we don't do Bellissimo to provoke.
Mm-mm.
We do Bellissimo to celebrate,
right?
And sometimes, you know, you might use terms or might kind of, you know, just to make the copy interesting, you might just kind of go off a tangent, which you know, in its kind of reviewing. But yeah, I don't read magazines. Like I look at the pictures.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know if you read much of the magazine.
I do a little bit, but it has to like the headline has to capture me.
Yeah.
It really needs to be like, okay, now I'm going to read this. It has to be something that's really, really interesting. Like I used to read a lot of the Rolling Stone back in the day when it was more interesting than it is now. And then it was cool. Like, you know, if you read like the old Hunter S. Thompson articles of Rolling Stone.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
They were rad. And then like there were other writers that along the way that had the same sort of feel and you would grab that. But you know,
then when
honestly,
you have authors like this writing an article, then of course, you know, you're gonna read it. I mean, not of course, but like,
but generally, you know, you're generally skipping over a lot of the stuff.
So that's why I wanted to make it a little bit fun to read. So people wouldn't just kind of once they kind of start reading a little bit, they were like, okay, let's go through it.
Yeah.
Because you need the text in the layout. So if you do, we might as well want to make it funny.
You know what could be fucking awesome is if you get the guys to read it and then do like an audio.
Oh, audiobook. Hell yeah.
Audiobook.
With a like Roman accent. Like a Roman accent.
Yeah, get like a guy that speaks English with a Roman accent or Italian.
It's a whole podcast. Right,
and then
there.
Just boom.
No, 100%.
Sick.
Also, because the thing of the accents is a very touchy one as well, if I found out. and so we did a Bellissimo on Germany.
Mm-mm.
And that wasn't easy because although we try to celebrate places, when you go to Germany, man, like that much to celebrate, to be
honest.
It's
a diamond in the rough. It really is very, very rough. Yeah.
Like, you know, you're not going to have good food. You're not going to have, like, you're going to stumble upon some kind of people who really didn't get the memo. So it's, I don't know, it's quite interesting. So we, you know, you get the material while you travel. So we're like, oh yeah, let's write this. Oh, they're so this and that. And but then you can a little bit. And then we had this magazine. We're like, but we need someone German to do some promo here because otherwise I'm like, yeah, I'll do it. You know, I'll
speak.
Ivan was like,
no, you can't.
No, you're not.
No, because you know, because the German might find it racist. And I was like, dude. It's okay, you know.
We can be racist. I think they haven't finished their panel.
We got some credits, you know. We got a little bit.
We got still credits, so we can still be racist with the Germans for
no,
a little bit.
No, but you know, really, you know, you don't want to offend anybody. So we had someone lined up to do it, then didn't happen and whatever. But it's but the accent thing is
It's a funny one.
It's a funny one.
I was actually listening to I don't know if you follow stand up comedy at all.
I don't follow it, but I know a few dudes.
Yeah, there's this guy, Russell Peters. He's a Canadian, Indian Canadian. And he does accents in his stand-up all the time, but like Chinese accents and stuff like that. And he says the only people that get offended are white guys and girls. The Chinese guy from Hong Kong recognizes his accent and he's like, oh my God, that's my accent. And he's actually quite stoked about it. But then there'll be somebody else in the crowd. They'll be like, that's so racist. And so that's the problem. But
don't get me started on that. It's a very deep and not deep, I wouldn't say deep, but it's a very long conversation.
Yeah, no, of course. It's a pain.
With no, absolutely no outcome, with a result, right?
Of course,
like,
we can just bitch and moan for a little bit.
And like, you know what, you know, three white guys talking about, you know, was racist.
I'm not, you're assuming I'm white.
Yeah, you're assuming
I'm white. I'm very offended.
You're assuming I'm a guy.
At this
There's moment. A whole series of, you're very, very problematic there, Zerbini. It's a problem.
Okay, yeah, sorry. I don't want no more assuming here.
But yeah, no, it's one of those like little tangly webs that is a mission. But it's cool that, you know, there's still space to play with that kind of stuff. If you go to the third world, like in South Africa, we can mess around quite a bit with a lot of things. You mustn't make it race based.
Right.
But you can make it religion based. That's not a problem.
Sure.
Because our problem there, our problems with people aren't what they believe in, but it's the color of their skin in South Africa, historically speaking.
Sure.
You know, it's weird. So if you play around with like Jews and Christians, it's like, it's cool.
Okay.
It's weird.
All right.
But then, of course, if you touch the skin, then it's like, oh my God, you touch the skin.
Yeah.
Oh, no, so it's a hate thing.
Yeah, I guess so. Also, I guess the religion one is another one. We also wanted to do an issue of Bellissimo on it was the holy issue,
right?
You know, and we wanted to go to where was that? Oh, that's the word. It's escaping me. We wanted to go to Lourdes, and we wanted to go to
Medjugorje.
Very good. Which, you know, there's a lot of material there because Medjugorje I don't have anything to say on what people believe, but then the whole kind of scenario there isn't very holy at all from what I hear. You know, there's a lot of people selling a lot of stuff, and there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of consumerism, there's a lot of, you know, things that are growing on the basis of the fact that people are actually
desperate.
Desperate to find, I guess, an answer, to find a sign, to find something which they might find in a pot, brand new, bought in Medjugorje, but I'm not sure that's the real place. So there was a lot of material there, I think, to be shot. But then again, we thought about it, and we decided against bringing in the whole kind of, you know, religion thing. Yeah.
Also, because if you're going there to celebrate it, you know, if that's the ethos of the magazine, you have to really like be like, okay, let's find the positive in the capitalism.
Right, right. No, that's right. That's right. But I think when you talk about celebration, I don't particularly mean endorsing or taking the side of sharing the same view. I think celebrating means, I guess, for what we think, is to just give them a voice which kind of puts them in, not in a mockery light, but in an elevating sort of light.
Yeah, I'd say it's like the concept of steel manning and straw manning. No, if you have an argument, you make a straw man. If you make a straw man argument against somebody, it's something that's very easy to take down. If you make a steel man argument, it's something that's very hard to take down. Right. So if I'm listening to you and we have a disagreement, if I'm the best way for me to try and get you on my side is to make a steel man argument for your thing.
Right.
Right. So I'm going to propose to you what I understand of your argument in the best possible light, right?
Correct, correct.
So I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying I understand this. This is how it's cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's exactly what we mean, in a sense that you're you. I think you're kind of fun and interesting looked at this way.
Yeah.
So there's no denunciation. There's no... try to be no judgment. It's just, you know, also because that's why, you know, we make our images are so warm, they're so flashy. You know, there's nothing that might kind of bring the subject down or making it look like you know, like denigration or how do you say
that? No, it's right. It's exactly correct, you're not pulling them down. You're not making them cheap.
Right, but they're still there, and they're kind of funny, and they're kind of fun, and they've got their own thing going on. So we want to look at that.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. The feeling that you get from the magazine is very positive. It's like what a cool, like, you know, you feel cool about it, you know, and it's like you do want to go to Ostia.
I wanted to go to Austria.
And even Germany. Well, I've got a thing for Germans, so it's cool. I like that whole like depression that they have and those cars that make a lot of noise and, you know, that kind of stuff. So
you should definitely go to Austria. But you see, what would we do with Bellissimo? So Bellissimo, although it seems a bit kind of, you know, all over the place, it has a structure. And the structure is that we looked at stereotypes, which aren't too, you know, offensive or kind of, obviously, too extreme, and we just play with Dan. But we take them to an extreme, which is absurd. So therefore, you can't kind of get hung up on that because obviously we're making fun of that. We're playing with a concept. We're not. So it is a concept project, right? So it is nothing in Bellissimo is real.
Yeah.
The people are real, but then what we say is absolutely absurd, and it should be obvious to, you know, to an adult mind that it is an absurd story that we're telling you. And we really touched some incredible levels with Germany because we claim that all Germans are perverts and that, you know, and that there are some you know, and all Germans, and one of the national kind of pastime is gerbling, and people are gerbling.
Should we explain what gerbling is?
We might.
Is gerbling what I think it is?
It is.
Okay, so gerbling is basically you take a gerbil or a hamster, and you get it to go up your butthole. And so it moves. It's there a sexual is. Practice. We don't judge.
It's hardcore. It's so cool. Obviously, you know, all Germans are not gerbling. You know, it's not,
there are enough German gerblers.
I think there's a fair amount, but it's just that stereotype of you know the fact that Germans are so kind of organized and such kind of sex, you know, perverts. Yeah, no. And we managed to meet this dude who was an ambassador for Bellissimo's Germany, and we totally explained to him what we're doing, and he was a sex master, but the most organized sex master you could ever meet. And he took us into his a playroom, I think he called it, and told us his life story, which was very touchy, and we got that in the magazine that, you know, how actually his life story is very, very touching, inspiring, because he was coming from like the outside of not a big city, kind of neglected by his own family because he was gay, and then kind of turned to, you know, Hamburg first and Berlin. And then he was such a creative sex dude that people were kind of exiting the gay clubs to go back to his. and the gay club's owner were complaining to him like, you know, you can't just steal the customers. And we're like, dude, make it more fun and the people will stay. Like, that is more fun in my house. And he had this whole setup with the swing and with all of the drawers, with the dildos. It was so clinical and so perfectly organized that it stopped to be sexy. There's nothing sexy in those pictures and there's nothing pervy. It's just like, it's just really
like good management, like good great
management.
It's an operating theater.
It was like, so I'm gonna, you know, I'm not gonna do the German accent now, but I'm, you know, I'm gonna invite these guys
it's
over.
Right, it's all right. You're doing the Italian accent. It's fine.
You know, I invite these guys over. You know, and their sessions of, I'm not
this
making
is in the
this
magazine.
Up. This is all in the magazine. It is. I'm not making it up. Like there are professionals flying all over Europe to come to my sessions, and they're, you know, 8 hour longs. We start 8 o'clock in the morning after I have the breakfast. I put on some Lord of the Rings soundtrack. And off we go, you know. And we were like, Max, you're the dude. Like, you know, you've got the whole operation here.
But which music from Lord of the Rings? Are we talking about the opening theme or like the battle theme?
Must be the battle. It has to be the battle, dude. It has to be the battle, dude.
It could be on a shuffle, so it comes up a bit. Yeah, kind of, just, you know,
the mood just changes depending on
8 hours would be like the whole movie, actually. Like,
yeah, the whole three of them.
And thinking about it, like, I know nothing about it, but I think he would have like a whole like organization of like a start off with this and then climax.
It starts off easy.
Absolutely.
With a small butt plug.
Yeah.
A small gerbil.
Yeah. Keep him healthy. But then like, and then it was like, oh, you know, I get really upset when people like, oh, where are the condoms? Of course the condoms are at arm reach, just like reach on the right and there they are. But like, you have to look at where everything is before I turn the lights off. Don't get the basics wrong with Max. You know, you gotta understand that.
Yeah, because otherwise it just breaks the mood.
Absolutely.
You can't have somebody just Max, sorry. But
Dave Chappelle had a joke about like the orgy.
Where's the medium dildo?
He was like, nothing like turns off an orgy more than someone that just says, ooh. He's like, I fucked up an orgy once. Yuck.
You don't want to be that guy. No. They're all going to talk about you when you're in the bathroom.
Definitely. He probably has like a little like TripAdvisor kind of review page.
One star.
Like, I could not find the condoms after he turned off the lights.
He was a pain in the back. So.
You should have told me that.
But you know, like Max, we met such incredible people in all the other Bellissimos and in the Germans as well. But you know, we did Cortina and we did Austin. In Austin, there was Angelo. We were lucky to just meet Angelo on a stroll on the Ostia Longomare. And this guy was a presenter. He was a beauty contest presenter. And and he had the most kind of charming mannerism about him. And it was so, you know, it was so cultured about the history of Rome, the history of Ostia, and but also he had an incredible sense of humor, and he completely kind of got what we were doing, and he was a very strong sort of pillar of the first Bellissimo. Then he came up to Milan when we did the launch in Milan. All of the girls at Barbasso were like, you know, in awe of him, like they were completely, you know, in love, because this guy,
he's a power,
charisma, yeah,
absolutely. So you see, like, the project gives us the chance to meet people who otherwise you would never meet, who are actually incredibly inspiring.
It'd be such an amazing series, like for Netflix or something.
Oh yeah,
like with characters,
yeah, like a True Detective one, but like for each city.
No, but even just like an episode for each city or each issue. And treat it as like a magazine and just like tell the story. Like what you said before, like the podcast or like the audiobook, but actually have like the people, like the visual aspect of it. And just tell the story of these people. It would be like amazing. I think like that would really, really be a huge hit.
Like a travel program for
Netflix. Yeah.
It would be sick. How many have you done now? Because Bellissimo came out 2 years ago, the first one.
No, the first one actually came out in 2019.
Okay.
And we've done 3.5 now. So we did Ostia, we did Cortina d'Ampezzo, we did Germany, and then we did a special project commissioned by Dazed with Calvin Klein, which never came out. It was never printed. It was like kept digital. And that one, that's why it's half, but we put quite a bit of work in it, but they didn't need so much material, and so that's the.
And it's like when you talk about it, it's like it doesn't really give the whole scope of the project, because it really is a really thick book. It's a lot of work.
No, it can be.
I've seen
the ones. Yeah, yeah, completely. The German one is quite thick. The German was a very, very challenging project, because we decided that it was going to be so Bellissimo is a concept project, right? So it's not a magazine. So everything in it is made up. And every time we do it, it takes a different format. And so the first time it was like a beach magazine that you flick through when you're at the beach. And then the second one, Cortina, was a fashion like from the 70s.
Yeah, I think that's the first one I saw. Right.
And then the German one was going to be a German language course. Right. And that's the thickest of all. And that one saw actually the arrival of Giacomo Torsani, Jack Torsani, who's now our graphic designer and co-art director, I guess, because we are there, me and Ivan, we are direct, and we've got, a very kind of clear vision of how we want each issue. But then of course Jack is an extremely creative figure as well. So we just kind of put our heads together and make that. And that had to be thick, because now your school books were thick, and inside there are all these kind of, there are the exercises, but none of us knew German. So like, you can just imagine how you can try to be funny in a language that you have to kind of deepel all the time. Deepel? Is that the?
Deepel?
Deepel, you know, is like an app, right?
That's the one that kind of translates. Like, well, you
have
to
Google Translate.
Google Translate.
Yeah, whatever.
ChatGPT it.
Like, yeah,
that would have saved you. Like now,
I know, yeah. I know.
Would have been amazing. And I don't know how good it is for like translation, though.
But you just say, you write something funny in German, and it says does not compute.
Yeah, I can't do that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's it. Yeah, that's exactly.
But and now you've just come out with Tagada, which is another big project of yours.
Yeah. Well, with Tagada, so Tagada is me. So there's no, it's just my own work. And it's a fun project. It was a fun project to shoot, of course, but it doesn't have the aesthetic of Bellissimo. It's a more of a serious project, I guess. It's a journey. That speaks of a very specific time in the life of kids, and it's a specific time that I lived when I was in Italy, and it's basically when you stop being a child and start becoming an adult. A teenager. So it's a coming of age kind of project that is all set around the Fiera, the Luna Park, the fun fairs. Yeah. People call it in different ways. But when I was a kid, so 5 days a year in the summer, the whole, main square of the town would be stormed by rides, and among them there was the Tagada, Calcinculo, which is like the one with the seats
merry-go-round sort of thing.
Merry-go-round, right? And then the bumper cars, and so there you were allowed to go even at nights, unsupervised, and you were only about maybe 12. You weren't going to soccer practice or basketball practice or whatnot. You weren't going to school. You weren't going to catechismo. So there was no grown-ups around. It was just a lot of your friends and some kids from the neighboring country, neighboring towns. So you had to really kind of make some choices there. I didn't know it. You don't know that you are, but you need to understand where you're going to be. How are you going to be, kind of projecting yourself? Because, there's girls there and there's people you might don't like. There's people that you might not be friends with, people that you want to be friends with. So it's a very socially challenging moment in the life of someone who's just barely being able to get out in the evenings alone. And going back to my hometown after I've kind of left for the UK, I thought these places, were really kind of important. They were extremely exciting for me. Those 5 days, and there was a lot of kind of insecurity going on. There was a lot of emotions going on at the time that was all completely masked by this kind of fun lights, and you know, and like the lights and the people and the, but you were really kind of struggling inside to understand what the hell was going on and who you were going to kiss.
If you're going to kiss someone.
If. Yeah. So then I started, you know, kind of shooting that project in 2014. And, you know, it's not even easy to understand where the funfairs are because, you know, they might be here one day, they go there tomorrow. I want to go around Italy to find a lot of different ones just to give the project like a lot of kind of, you know, breathing space and wide scope. So yeah, it took me a while. And I didn't want to self-publish that. I was self-publishing is great, but it's a nightmare, you know. I mean, it's not. So I was like, I'm gonna find a publisher for this, and I'm gonna find a good designer who's gonna, you know, be on my side for that. And so it took me a while. And after a few designers that kind of were in, and then they were like kind of flaky and just kind of, you know, disappeared. I talked to Francesco Valtolina, who is a great designer and an incredible, inspiring individual. Very, very interesting, very cultured, very good at what he does. And he makes tons of books and he liked the project. And he was like, let's do this.
So, no, it, from what I've seen, it looks really, really fantastic.
I'm
bummed I missed that on the exhibition. Also, the prints looked beautiful.
The prints is what people actually get most excited about when they open the book. Then I hope they'll really enjoy, you know, the pictures themselves. But the book is made to be sensorially what the fiera, the fun fair is. So all the pictures are like fully, you know, fully blown. Like there's no edges, like the full pictures, and it's very, very glossy.
I can smell it just looking at the pictures.
Yeah.
Just looking at the pictures on Instagram. It's like I can smell that glossy ink, and it's just, which is one of the reasons I actually started taking pictures, is that smell.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so for me, it's like very sensorial. That like when I see that shine, I'm like, oh, okay, I know exactly what you're talking about.
It is for many people. It is for many people. And they just really, they love the smell, and they love how heavy the paper is because it's so glossy and so, you know, who does, you know, like gloss is kind of referred to magazine which aren't, or magazines or books or content which isn't really important or deep or of significance, while for what the book is talking about is perfect, because that's the kind of glossy and plasticky sort of feel that you have on the funfairs. If you've ever, you know, been to one, then you'll see, and people go like, wow.
And also it pops out so much, you know, it becomes very three-dimensional, the whole image and everything, really immerse yourself in it. No, it's cool. I'm really like curious. I want to see that as soon as I get a chance. And then,
it is pretty crazy. Yeah. I know you're looking at the time, but it is kind of crazy when you think about, like, when you were saying it's one of those places where they just like all parental barriers just like go down. It was like, we'll pick you up at this time. Don't fuck up. Don't do anything stupid.
Yeah.
Stay alive. And
that's
this is like $20. Like, this is what you can
make
do.
It last.
Make it last. And it's like up to you. Total responsibility. It's like, this is your babysitter.
Yeah, completely. You're in the town, and you know, so you know, you're not going to go far, and you're among all your friends. So that kind of gives parents the reassurance that, you know, you're not alone. You're not going to go off and, you know, wander off. So but again, like it opens up a whole new world of experience for you, and it can be fun and scary.
Yeah, I feel
like started in 2014, so pretty much when it came out, it was going into that coming of age. Like the actual project, you started in 2014.
I started photographing.
So by the time it came out, it was already going into that coming of age.
Yeah, time for the book. Yeah,
it was like preteen, pretty much.
True.
Now I sort of feel like we missed out there because we grew up in South Africa in this little tiny spot. And there wasn't, the only way to meet up with friends, with people in a sort of environment like that was like the Bible study team, like Friday nights they would what was it called? Fellowship.
Yeah.
Something like that. And you would just like, you know, even if you didn't believe in anything, you would just go there because there were other girls people. And there were other people and whatnot.
Sort of catechism.
It wasn't even catechism because it was just like, you know, in South Africa, there's a lot of Protestantism and there was like, it was just like basically we'll say a prayer while we're here so that it's like the God is here.
Right.
But the rest of the time it's just to like play and like have fun and play like rugby, you know, whatever, have a bit of fun.
Oratorio. Then we'll become oratorio.
Exactly. Oratorio.
Yeah.
So it was sort of like that. And that was the only thing. There was like once a year there was like a fair, but it was like, you know, it was a family thing. We were like we had like 60 kilometers of coastline. And everybody from the coast would come to the same place. But there wasn't that vibe. They wouldn't just leave you there.
That's amazing though, you know, and that's another aspect which extremely fascinates me. But and there are so many declination of that. But then again, that's great because it keeps, you know, the young, the kids, the older, they're all together. There are other events. What is so unique about the fun fairs? Is this just a kid? Like,
yeah,
the kids are on their own.
It's like Gangs of New York. You really do grow up because I think that's what I was trying to get is that we didn't, you don't have that opportunity to grow up like that. All of a sudden, then you go to university and then you're away from home for the first time.
That's the fun fair.
And that's a fun fair is like shots on a Monday night at like one for the price of two or two for the price of one shot. But there wasn't that like slow build into it, you know, which is one of the reasons maybe that in Italy we don't have like a big drinking culture of like people like getting hammered and, you know, like as soon as they're free, because we have this like sort of gradual, you know, here you go, you're free for a little bit.
Totally. Yeah. My dad was the one giving me the wine.
And then there's also that. So you got like the parents aren't too crazy about like not giving any wine. And then this whole coming of age is like a gradual thing that you sort of grow into, whereas
and then they stay at home until they're like 35.
Exactly.
100%. It's crazy. It's like totally like it's totally
weird.
Opposite,
it's weird,
right?
Because you don't need to. You know, you have your freedom in this country. Like even if you live at home with your with your folks, dude. I have to let you go. You got to hot out. So I want to keep you here forever and ever and ever. But
this is so fun.
This is fun.
We'll do another one. To talk about like specific project, like we did talk about more than other times.
We were quite good at this time.
We're pretty good.
I think he's very good at this.
No, thank you.
Yeah. So, Paolo, where can we find your work? Where can we buy the book?
Thank you for asking that. That's great. So the book is out with Skinner Books. So Skinner Books is the publisher, and you know through his website anybody can just with a click and get the book delivered to their doorsteps or in the best toy stores. You know, I mean, you got Mi Camera, you got I guess he's gonna go to Marcel here in Milan, or I'm sure he's gonna be.
He says toy stores. I think he means camera stores.
Yeah, I want to have that mistake.
they are toys.
Yeah, no. I just wanted to make sure that
just big babies
taking sounds. Giocattoli. And but you know, it's gonna be well distributed because Skinner Books gonna distribute it well, so it's gonna be out.
And then it's at Paolo Zerbini on Instagram, right?
Yeah, Paolo Zerbini. Yeah, that's me. Hello.
Fantastic. So cool, man.
All the links are gonna be in the description.
And that's for now. So please, guys, if you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe and hit the like button and have a conversation down in the comments below.
Thank you.
Arcade Studio Podcast. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Thank you very much. Ciao.
Woo! Che figata, ragazzi. Bellissimo.
Grazie per aver ascoltato Arcade Studio Podcast con Andrea e René Olivo. 100% autoprodotto e gratis. Disponibile su YouTube, Spotify, SoundCloud, Apple Music, Amazon Music e altre piattaforme di podcast. Come tutti i creativi, anche noi siamo ossessionati dal feedback. Quindi, lasciaci una recensione. Ti è piaciuta una puntata, ospite o tema? Scrivici! Hai qualche commento, suggerimento o proposta? Scrivici! Non ti piace il font, i colori o come parliamo? Fottiti! Ma poi scrivici! Siamo aperti ad ogni tipo di interazione perché il tuo supporto è fondamentale per aiutarci a migliorare. Arcade Studio Podcast con Andrea e René Olivo. Listen more.